The economic historian Neil Ferguson explores the role of man-made institutions in driving global change.
Why did the West get so much richer and more powerful than the rest of the world?
The Reith Lectures 2012.
And why is that slipping away?
On Tuesday morning at 9.
What's gone wrong with Western institutions? They used to be so good.
Over on BBC Radio 4.
This is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting on 90 to 93 FM on digital radio. And you can also listen to us live online in high-definition sound. It's just gone 11 o'clock and time now for Jazz Lineup with Kevin Legendre.
Hello. This week, Jazz Lineup celebrates a great moment in jazz history. For the next 90 minutes, we take you back to the golden days of 1957. That was the year of Miles Ahead. This superlative album was made by Miles Davis with the orchestra under the direction of Gil Evans. Shortly, you'll hear that album played live at the Vortex Jazz Club in Dalston, London, just last month on what would have been Gil Evans' 100th birthday. We couldn't let today go by without mentioning the untimely and tragic death of Abram Wilson, and I'll be paying tribute to him later in the programme. So to our recording of Miles Ahead at the Vortex Club in East London, which was filled to capacity with an enthusiastic audience to hear an orchestra comprising some stellar names in British jazz. They're called the London Jazz Orchestra and are directed by Scott Stroman. So who plays the role of Miles Davis? It was none other than Gil Evans' son, Miles, who crossed the Atlantic to share the soloist spot with a British trumpet legend who toured with the Gil Evans Orchestra. He is, of course, Henry Lowther. For those of you who may have forgotten, Miles Ahead is one of Miles Davis and Gil Evans' most forward-thinking collaborations. It's a record that stands out for the highly original textures that were created by Davis on flugelhorn and a 19-piece orchestra that featured low, purring instruments such as tuba and bass clarinet. The largely pianoless album also had beautiful pieces such as Evans' original song Blues for Pablo and Ahmad Jamal's New Rumba. Anyway, before we listen to that classic music played by the London Jazz Orchestra, let's remind ourselves of some of the highlights of Gil Evans' rich discography. His career started in earnest in the 40s when he arranged for Claude Thornhill, and later in the decade he formed his memorable partnership with Miles Davis, working on scores for the trumpeter's nine-piece band on the influential Birth of the Cool Sessions. In the years that followed, Evans came into his own as a band leader, and our first composition comes from his 1961 album, Out of the Cool. It's an epic piece called La Nevada. That will be followed by two tracks recorded at Evans' special 75th birthday concert at the Hammersmith Odeon, London in 1987. Reflecting Evans' love of rock and pop, the pieces are The Police's Synchronicity and Jimi Hendrix's Stone Free.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to Vintage Gil Evans on Jazz Lineup. Coming up next, Synchronicity.
Thank you.
And to complete our trilogy of classic Gil Evans, this is Stone Free, recorded in 1987. Gil Evans' orchestra playing Jimi Hendrix's Stone Free. And before that, The Police's Synchronicity, both taken from a concert at London's Hammersmith Odeon in 1987 to mark Evans's 75th birthday. It was a transatlantic band packed with stars like Steve Lacy, Don Weller, George Adams, John Sermon, and a very young Miles Evans. And before that, it was La Nevada from the classic 1961 album Out of the Core, again with an all-star cast that featured Elvin Jones, Jimmy Nepper, and Bud Johnson. And so to the concert performed on the 13th of May at the Vortex Jazz Club in London, on what would have been Gil Evans's 100th birthday. Before the band played the music of Miles Ahead, the audience had the opportunity to hear Miles Evans and musical director Scott Stroman discussing the legacy of Gil Evans. Miles Evans started by talking about Gil Evans as a father and musician.
Well, he was the best father in the world, and he was a true genius, in my opinion, and a great sound innovator, just really loved the music so much. It really was all about the music for him, and just incredible how open he was, and warm, selfless. To see him just put together so many interesting projects within so many different generations and eras was really incredible as well. You know, just from doing things in the early 30s to doing things in the late 80s, what an amazing scope. And it was just incredible how much ground and how many different styles he really covered, yet still throwing in, most of the time, the amazing voicings that he was so talented at composing and coming up with, you know? So it was really something very special.
Trumpeter Henry Lowther, who toured with Gil Evans, then explained what the music of Gil Evans means to him.
Well, I feel very very close to this music. One of the first albums I ever bought was Porgy and Bess. There was a friend of mine in my hometown, Leicester. I remember going around their student, going around their flat, and they played this album. That was the first time I heard this album, and I thought, I've got to go out and buy that, and I did. And then I never dreamt at that point in my life, I was about 20 or 21, I never believed that one day I'd actually be working with Gil Evans. I also met Miles Davis in 1969 and had a conversation with him. But Gil, I did quite a number of things for him in the mid-80s, apart from two seasons at Ronnie Scott's, also a tour which we did together with Miles. Miles, you were 18 then, I think. Yeah. And then also, because he came over here a number of times to do a couple of films, he wrote the arrangements for Absolute Beginners. If anybody saw that film, it was chosen for the Royal Presentation. And also, he wrote an arrangement of the slow movement from the Mozart Jupiter Symphony for the film Insignificance, which is a story about Albert Einstein, an improbable story, Albert Einstein, Marilyn Monroe, and I think Joe DiMaggio. And also I went to Montreal with him, with a band called RMS, and he was invited to come with us to play the piano, and he always said that was the only time in his life he'd ever been booked just as a pianist. So I had quite a bit of experiences with him. It means a lot to me. I feel very close to this music. And 40, 50 years later, this music still knocks me out. It's amazing how long its endurance, really.
The musical director of the London Jazz Orchestra, Scott Stroman, asked why people were so loyal and so inspired by Gil Evans.
I think part of that is, you know, they loved his ideas and they loved his incredible chord voicings, his arranging, you know, his presence as a musician and his warmth. I mean, the Birth of the Cool album, for example, was mostly his idea. And just think they really respected the things that he came up with. And even if it was people that were not younger than him, I mean, of course, Miles Davis was approximately 15 years younger than Gil Evans. But there were other people that my father would hang out with at that time that were maybe older than him or the same age. Sometimes he would hang out with Louis Armstrong and, you know, or you know, older musicians as well. So it was amazing that it was the whole scope from younger to older, same age, all that. And I really don't know the exact answer to that, but I think that that's probably it. And I know from person to person, of course, it did vary. Not everybody was loyal for the same reason.
A member of the audience asked Miles Evans what it was like to be so close to the legacy of Miles Davis, and what sort of music did Gil Evans play when he was young?
He listened to everything, really. I mean, we would hear Stevie Wonder, we would hear Frank Zappa, but he would definitely be listening to a lot of Miles Davis, and he would definitely be listening to some Ravel and Stravinsky. So it was definitely a variety, or people would come over and bring their projects. Maybe they would call him a couple of times or more and want him to hear their stuff, so there would be unknown stuff that would be being played. And he had just so many records. It just shows that when I asked my father about being a great sound innovator and how he did it, taking a little piece of all these different styles and putting them together in a funnel and coming out him, when I saw that record collection that he had, it made sense. Because, I mean, from classical to rock to jazz to R&B, I mean, just an incredible amount of records. A lot was being played, and it was not just one style, many different genres. And, as I said, it's horrible being named Miles Evans. I'm kidding. Just joking.
Scott Stroman was keen to know about the music left by Gil Evans. How many treasured charts were there?
It's going to take time. I mean, it's the kind of thing where my father was really into continuing to be productive. And for him, since he wrote all the music, it wasn't a big deal for him if it was thrown in the garbage, because he wrote it, so he knew that he could remember it and write it again. But people like Herbie Hancock would yell at him and say, "Please, Gil, don't throw that music out. Don't throw that out. Please, please." So, my father would do that, but he would do it because he wanted to push himself to write new music, whether it was a new version of Barbara's song or a completely new composition or a completely new arrangement on something. He would do that. So because of all that, he also was busy doing his stuff and wasn't spending tons of time keeping everything perfectly organized. Like, for example, we didn't have the original charts for the records that are the most famous records, like Miles Ahead, Porgy and Bess, Sketches of Spain. We did not have those until they were found in a storage space in Philadelphia, one of Miles Davis's storage spaces. So that's why it's a process. And eventually all this music is going to be free, but it takes time. It was not left in perfect order. So, it has to be gone through and then slowly, just made available, like scanning it in and maybe putting it into Sibelius and doing PDF files from there to get it all ready. So it's going to take time, but it's an amazing process, and thank God we have as much of the music as we have.
Miles Ahead is something of a sacred text. To what extent did Scott Stroman feel he had to be faithful to it?
This is an extremely good question, and it's also a question for the soloist, because things come up like, should we play what Miles played, or should we play our own thing, and do we play, what bits are sacred? I've done a lot of, as it were, you might call it repertoire-type things like this, of this, and some other people here directing Duke Ellington, for example, and this question comes up a lot. For me, what I do is I try to learn it absolutely inside and out as best I can, and then forget all about it and then spit it out a bit later so that it becomes fresh for us. So I don't think we're trying to replicate the record here, but I think we are trying to understand exactly how they played on that record, so we're really inside the language of the music. That's my own opinion. I think that we want to understand the language of the music, learn the language, so then we can speak the language. So I think you'll hear these guys playing tonight, and there will be certain bits which they will play that were Miles playing, partly because they might have been written by Gil, but also partly because they seem to be integral to the way the piece works. And then there'll be other bits where they improvise in the same way that if you listen to all the outtakes, you hear Miles changing his improvisation every time. The articulation and the flow of the band and the speeds and those sort of things are things we talked about a lot in rehearsal. We have some discussions. Most of the time, I'd say we go along with the way the guys played the record, but that still gives us the freedom to play it, to make it come alive for us, because we're never going to play it like the record anyway. We want it to be live now in 2012 and not just a museum piece.
The original Miles Ahead album featured 10 compositions that start with Springsville and end with I Don't Want to Be Kissed by Anyone But You. In between, there is the superb Evans Davis composition Miles Ahead and Kurt Weill's My Ship, the combination of standards and originals, all wrapped up in Evans's gorgeously cool yet sensual textures, made for a fabulous 37-odd minutes of music. And so to the concert. Scott Stroman presented the show as if the orchestra were playing the original vinyl LP. So we will first hear side one, and then flip over for side two. The musicians are, on saxes and woodwinds, Martin Speak, incidentally the only sax in the band, Martin Hathaway, Pete Hurt, Josephine Davis and Mick Foster. On trumpets, Noel Langley, Robbie Robson, Mike Lovat, Yaz Ahmed and Adam Chatterton. On French horns, Dave Lee and Paul Cott. On trombones, Pete Beechill, Gordon Campbell and Matthias Exgilson. On bass trombone, Richard Henry. Tuba, Oren Marshall. On bass, Alec Dankworth. On drums, Paul Clavis. The solo trumpets are Henry Lowther, slightly to the left of the stereo image, and Miles Evans, slightly to the right. This is Miles Ahead by Miles Davis, with the orchestra under the direction of Gil Evans, as played by the London Jazz Orchestra, directed by Scott Stroman. You're going to hear Springsville, The Maids of Cadiz, The Duke by Dave Brubeck, and My Ship by Kurt Weill.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Miles Evans, Henry Lowther.
That was the first part of our concert by the London Jazz Orchestra, based on the first side of Miles Davis and Gil Evans's Miles Ahead. The musicians have captured all of the detail of the original work and given it an added layer of mystery and melancholia by way of new instruments such as the two French horns. Sit back and now enjoy side two of Miles Ahead. Blues for Pablo, then New Rumba, the meaning of the blues going into lament, and finally, I Don't Want to Be Kissed by Anyone But You. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Miles Ahead, a selection of 10 pieces arranged by Gil Evans featuring Miles Davis. The concert was given to commemorate Gil Evans' 100th birthday on the 13th of May at the Vortex Jazz Club in Dalston, London, and featured the London Jazz Orchestra, conducted by Scott Stroman. The rather daunting role of Miles Davis was taken alternately by Miles Evans and Henry Lowther. It was a wonderful testament to the musical sophistication and emotional depth of Gil Evans, one of the greatest arrangers that jazz has ever known. That's it for this week. Next week, join Claire Martin for a session with the current BBC Radio 3 New Generation jazz artist, Shabaka Hutchings, and an interview with pianist Lynn Arial. Jazz on 3 tomorrow night returns to the Vortex for the idiosyncratic Belgian big band, the Flat Earth Society, in concert. There's lots of jazz across the BBC all week, so check out John Hellings on BBC Hereford and Worcester on Wednesdays at 7 for some classic jazz sounds. And now, on behalf of Jazz Lineup, I'd like to pay tribute to the late Abram Wilson. Abram made a huge impact on the London jazz scene in a relatively short space of time. He brought this absolutely infectious New Orleans energy, this very, very hearty, very upbeat, very joyous approach to music. And the three albums that he recorded for June Records, 2005's Jazz Warriors, 2007's Ride, Ferris Wheel to the Modern Day Delta, and 2009's Life Paintings, are absolutely full of that energy. And I think they'll be remembered in years to come as documents of a very, very fruitful time. But more than the music, there was this very, very larger-than-life personality. I remember a big, beaming smile and a warmth, an energy that he had, and an enthusiasm, a desire to motivate and to inspire other people to get involved in jazz. If there's one little image of Abram that I would mention that really sums him up, then it's Abram blowing his trumpet and singing and dancing in front of the Royal Albert Hall as part of the protest against the MOBO Awards decision to drop the jazz category one year. He led a group of street musicians that included Shabaka Hutchings, and they blew up a storm in front of the Royal Albert Hall because they believed that jazz should be represented and respected. And I think Abram was willing to fight for the music with every breath in his body, and he did so with great conviction, and I, for one, will definitely miss him. I leave you with a track from his last album, Life Paintings. This is the very beautiful, very joyous Rainbows and Fantasies. We'll be right back.
Hello and welcome to BBC Radio 3 Through the Night with me, Jonathan Swain. Well, to come in this couple of hours, concert performances of Debussy's La Mer and the Brahms Second Piano Concerto, as well as a concert from the 2009 International Harpsichord Festival in Belgrade, Ars Vivendi Clavicembalum. Handel and Friends, this concert was called, the Friends being Telemann, a suite of his, and a Vivaldi flute concerto. First, though, the great Mr. Handel himself. This opening offering, three excerpts from the Royal Fireworks and the Water Music's arrangements for solo harpsichord of an air and a minuet from the Water Music. And before them, harpsichordist Smilka Isakovic and Friends in the overture to Handel's Royal Fireworks music.
Thank you.
Handel from Belgrade, harpsichordist Smilka Isaković and friends, in arrangements of sections from the Royal Fireworks and Water Musics. Well, more from that concert a little later on. Right now, Debussy's La Mer, often compared with the paintings of Turner. Turner once famously had himself lashed to the mast of a boat in the North Sea so he could experience a storm at close quarters, and the young Debussy had a similar experience off the coast of Brittany, relishing the danger and how alive it made him feel. Yevgeny Svetlanov conducts the French National Orchestra